Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Apologist segment of Arc Studies Live. I'm your host, Rick Young. Arc Studies Live is the blogcast radio outreach of the Apologetic Research Center. ARC is a Christian ministry specializing in evangelism, Christian apologetics, and counterculture studies. For more information about ARC, go to the World Wide Web at www.arcstudies.org. Good afternoon, and welcome to another edition of ARC Studies Live. I'm your host, Rick Young. Okay, I am going to continue my series on the Nation of Islam in short order. One thing that I've realized here is I promised to do a series of segments related to the Nation of Islam, and the reality is they have been corrupted by the conversations that I've had with Rashish. Let me say this to start, and I hope Rashish is listening to this. I've actually sat and thought and considered this. The reality is that here we are, after having talked to this imam, quote-unquote, he says, and there were no imams in ancient Egypt. And I say that for a reason. I'll get back to that in a second. After talking to this imam and listening to some of the archive broadcasts, just trying to get some kind of take, what I found is that in reality, you know, I don't even think that he knows what it is that he believes. If you go back and you listen to the broadcast from the 7th, he clearly, first he represented himself as a student as a follower of Elijah Muhammad's teachings. Then he clearly said that he was a student, and you can listen to this in the archives, that he was a follower of Wardith Houdin Muhammad. In fact, he sent me a link to some stuff about him. Yesterday, he claimed to be a follower of some Egyptologist, Sheikh someone or the other. He sent me information from The Way International. What I'm finding here is that, again, I've said over and over and over, an individual can be sincere and be sincerely wrong, and it's possible to do both. And I do believe that this individual is sincerely wrong. One thing that I have said in giving the benefit of the doubt to the quote-unquote imam is that if you don't stand for something, you'll fall for anything. And what I'm starting to believe is that this brother doesn't stand for anything. He stands for everything. He claims to be a follower of things that are diametrically opposed. And it all gets, I think what his core belief system is related to something that he cannot know, that other individuals have led him into, and he sent me their works. Now, of course, he disavowed them. He's disavowed them once I publicly talked about them. Then he disavowed them and said, well, my car broke down, so I just sent you a bunch of crap. I apologize. He sent me a website that was completely in French. I think he's just looking for it because it had Egyptian pictures on it. That is not the work of someone who studies evidence. That's someone who is grasping at anything to support the thing that he believes. As I said from the very beginning, and I say again now, you know, I can disagree with individuals, and I have. Well, over the years, I've had numerous debates with individuals concerning matters of theology, but they were all related to individuals, again, co-opting the Word of God, the Bible. Individuals who claim things about the Bible that absolutely were not true. And a good example of this is, and I mentioned this again yesterday, to him, and he said nothing about it. If you go back and listen to the broadcast beginning on the 7th of last week and then Monday and Tuesday, he made the claim. First of all, he made the claim that there were no other kingdoms on the earth at the time of the first dynasty of Egypt. Well, the first dynasty of Egypt got everything, including their language, from the Sumerians, as well as the Babylonians were around. But he made the bold claim yesterday that there were no other kingdoms on the entire planet at the time of the first dynasty. And so he constantly changes what he says. Now, let's see. Scripture is clearing some of the things that it talks about. Exodus chapter 1 mentions the Pharaoh's supply cities, Pithom and Ramses, and so forth and so on. But that's not the point I'm making. The point that I want to make here is that I had told him that there were kingdoms that were around Egypt at the time of the Exodus, and he said they did not exist. Well, let me read this to you. I didn't get a chance because I've tried to give him the benefit of the doubt and followed him into numerous places, and then, you know, I just came to the conclusion that if you go where he goes, he'll jump somewhere else. Maybe he'll be with The Way tomorrow. He's already sent me The Way website. Or maybe he'll send me something in French and tell me I just don't understand it. He claims to be an etymologist, though I put links up because, again, I deal with evidence. And so with evidence, he said his field was etymology. All right, that's what he said by his own word. And as an example, he said some people can say camel, some camel. I don't even know what that has to do with anything. All right, but what I did was then I put the etymology of the words that were in dispute on a website when I said Elijah Muhammad said that Christians means to be crystallized into one and Christ means crusher. Again, he did a disservice. He called Elijah Muhammad a liar, said he didn't believe Farhad taught him the things that Elijah said in his books. And he tried to get to his point. His point was, you know, Egyptian. It's from the word kist. And then he's, you know, I don't know how you get the word kist from a hieroglyph. And so at any rate, maybe there is, you know, I believe there's a language called Kemet. I don't know. I don't claim to be an Egyptologist. But what I do know is that the word Christian doesn't mean crystallized into one. And so I put the etymology of those words, evidence, on my notes page, and he never addressed them. And that tends to be anything that's measurable he runs from, and then he tries to hide into various things. He sent me a couple of emails today, one in particular that was talking about the Quran can't be abrogated, which I find interesting because I'm sitting here reading the Quran. And again, you know, I believe that Allah is the God of the Quran. And I believe that the Quran, the Quran is the holy book of Islam, and I believe that Allah is the God of the Quran. You know, I just don't believe that the God of the Quran or Allah is the God of the Christian Bible. Now, we can debate whether or not we believe on the evidence which one is accurate. That can be room for discussion. There can be room for discussion on that. But with our position is this. We are set for the defense of the gospel. So where the Quran claims to reinterpret the word of God, then that's where we're engaged. ARC has been around now for 20 years. We have never engaged, for instance, Hindus. Because if I read something where a Hindu said something, then we're set for the defense of the gospel, wherever that theological discussion may be. And then we'll deal there. But my point is that I know Muslims that are honorable that stand for one thing, and we can sit and discuss it back and forth. When we discuss and we disagree and we make points, they don't escape into The Way International. They don't escape anywhere else. They stand on something. And that's why I kept saying, you know, I appreciate the fact that the brothers stand for something, but when I look, for what? Except, I guess the only thing it can be said that maybe he stands for is Egyptology, which, again, have no idea what his training is as far as that's concerned. All right. In Exodus chapter 13, when God talked to Moses and was telling him where to take the children of Israel, verse 17, then it came to pass when Pharaoh had let the people go and God did not lead them by the land of the Philistines, although that was near. So there's another kingdom near. Don't go by the kingdom of the Philistines, although that was near, for God said, lest perhaps the people change their minds when they see war and return to Egypt. Not to mention the fact that on their way to Palestine, they ran into numerous other nations. Many of you are familiar with the account of Balaam and Balak. I mean, there were numerous, the Amorites, the Hittites, numerous nations there. But yet my brother will tell me there were no nations on the earth. None, not one. You doubt me? Listen to yesterday's broadcast. Not one. And so that's beyond credulity. All right, in the Quran, Surah 2, verse 106, and this is what it says. Whatever message we abrogate or cause to be forgotten, we bring one that is better than it or one like it. Knowest thou not that Allah is possessor of power over all things? And so that's clear in what it says. Whatever message we abrogate. Abrogate means to do away with or cause to be forgotten. We bring one better or one like it. And so there is an abrogation spoken of in the Quran. Now, there's some discussion as to, you know, I've read commentary where they say, well, they're talking about the former scriptures, or the people of the Bible, what they call the people of the book. They call the Bible the book in the Quran. And they say, well, he was talking about that. But understand, according to the Quran, the Injil was the word of Allah sent by one of his previous prophets. And so if Allah can send word by his prophets and then just do away with it and then send something else, it's abrogation. And there's nothing wrong with that if that's what Allah wants to, Allah can do that. Allah can do that. Now, contrary to that, and that's every right, yes, every right. Okay? So I don't question that according to the Quran. What I say is the Bible makes a different claim about itself. In Matthew chapter 24, verse 34, he said, most assuredly I say unto you, verse 35, heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will by no means pass away. And he uses a double negative, he uses may. Both of those individually mean no way. When they're used together, it's emphatic. So what the Bible claims is that if you pull away all of the reality that is, God's word is the hook that it was hanging on. His word does not change. He makes that same point in Malachi. I mean, he doesn't change. His word doesn't change. As a matter of fact, let me give you another reference. In the book of Titus, chapter 1, Paul, well, I don't want to use this passage because it speaks of God who cannot lie, and I don't want to imply that Allah is lying. Allah is not lying. In the Quran, Allah has the power. He has the power to just do away with a former revelation, and that's fine for the Quran, but it's a big difference in the Bible. So there's a difference, and Muslims stand on the Quran. They do. My brother, on the other hand, sent me something that says that the Quran does not abrogate. I have three different Qurans. I have my, Abdullah Yusuf Ali's two-volume study Quran. I have Maulana Muhammad Ali's study Quran, and I have Muhammad Marmaduke Pickthall's. And that's not counting. I have an electronic edition, too, for my computer. And all of these works acknowledge the Hadith. All of them do. My brother said the Hadith doesn't matter. The traditions does not matter. And so, again, that's his right. He can believe whatever he chooses to believe, but it has nothing to do with Islam. All right, let me also point a couple other things out. All right? I made the point because understand that he became engaged when I made the point that Elijah Muhammad claimed that Christian means to be crystallized into one and Christ means crusher, and I pointed out that Christian is nothing more than, Christ with a suffix on it. That's all it is. It means of Christ. And they were called that in Antioch, according to Acts chapter 17. And so when I pointed that out, he went through this whole big thing about how it wasn't. And again, I put the evidence, the measurable evidence, up there. And he hasn't responded to that at all, par for the course. But then I also made the point that according to Elijah Muhammad's son, whom initially, when you go back and listen to it, he claimed to be a follower of Warith Huddin Muhammad. When after Elijah Muhammad died, okay, Elijah Muhammad's son, his son, then began to try to take the Nation of Islam in a more orthodox direction. And he renamed the group. They were no longer called the Nation of Islam. But what he did was he renamed the group the Belalians. Okay? He named them Belalians after Belal, who was said to have been an African follower of the Prophet Muhammad. Now, doesn't matter whether or not, some accounts say he was a slave of Muhammad, some say he wasn't. Okay, well, to me that's irrelevant, but that's what happened yesterday. The point I was making is they were called Belalians, I-A-N-S, because they were naming themselves after Belal. And you can find this stuff on the web. All you got to do is type in B-I-L-A-L or B-I-L-A-L-I-A-N-S. All Belalians means is after Belal or of Belal. And the reason why Warith Huddin Muhammad recast the Nation of Islam after this is because many believe that Belal was the first black Muslim. And so he was, associating the black Muslims in America, turning them from the Nation of Islam towards Orthodox Islam by naming them this. Now, I brought that up to emphasize this. Belal was an individual. Belalians are of Belal, just like Christ was an individual. Christians are of Christ. I can't believe that I have to make that point to him. But I made that point yesterday, and he totally ignored it and wanted to argue about the slavery. And you know what? To me, it's irrelevant. There are some who say that Belal was a slave of Muhammad. There are some said I read to him a hadith quote yesterday that said Muhammad sold a slave. To me, it's irrelevant. And I said that yesterday. That was part of the culture. Doesn't make it right, okay? But it was common. There's slavery mentioned in the Bible. In fact, and I'm not talking about just in the Old Testament, the Apostle Paul, the book of Philemon, the entire book of Philemon, is Paul telling Philemon to accept another Christian who was a slave and escaped, to accept him back. And so we can talk about the morality of that all day long. And what that means, we can talk about that all day long, but that was not the point. The point was to show this individual that what a common suffix means. Christian of Christ, Belalian of Belial. That's the first thing. The second thing is he asked me to produce evidence that there is it from a historical perspective that Uthman burned variant copies of the Quran. And at the end of the broadcast yesterday, I read in the very beginning of Maulana Muhammad Ali's Quran, where in the commentary there is a huge section on the abrogation or the destruction of differences in the variant versions. Now, I did slip up and use the word translation several times, but I made it clear. I don't mean translations as in, one author's translating from one. See, because the translation is this, okay? The Bible was written in Hebrew and Greek, and individuals translating it from Hebrew and Greek translated different ways. I myself translate. Okay, so I understand how difficult it is during the parsing process. Okay, And there are different translational methods, dynamic equivalence, complete equivalence. There are numerous methods. That's what a translation is. That's not what happened here with the Quran. With the Quran, it was not written in the time of Muhammad. Individuals memorized, which I think is phenomenal. They memorized his sermons. They memorized them. And when a bunch of them got killed in a battle, that's when Abu Bakr and Zayd said, we need to standardize and we need to write this down. Now, understand that while there was no formal copy of the Quran, individuals did take notes, you know, which, again, I think is phenomenal. They took notes on whatever they could. All right? And so what ended up happening was that once they gathered all these notes that they could with the individuals who could still remember things, they formalized one copy of the Quran, which by the time of Uthman was still in existence with the Quraysh tribe, but there were still variant versions where other individuals who kept notes kept things that were different. And it's these variant copies that Uthman burned. And there's a ton of stuff. It is a matter of history, whether you believe it was righteously done, wrongly done. I'm not implying it one way or the other. I'm just asking the question, and I asked a brother the question yesterday. You know, if this happened, then how do you know? Now, he could tell me it's a matter of faith, or he could have went down a road of evidence. Now, I have talked to Muslims who I think did a much better job of evidentially trying to make their point through deductive reasoning. You know, and I respect that. But just to say, you know, just to make the broad claim that it didn't happen and told me there is no evidence, and then, but this is the funny part, he told me there was no evidence, but then the brother said he knew what book I was getting that from, which, no book. I got it from the front of a Quran, and I only picked that up after, you know, I mean, this is common. But when he acted like he didn't know, I read it from the front of a Quran. Okay? And so, at any rate, you can pull this up. All you got to do is type Uthman, U-T-H-M-A-N, into any search engine, and there's a whole account of what happened. The account that I read was in the front of a Quran. Now, I'm not implying, again, right or wrong in what Uthman did. I'm not. He standardized the Quran. He had a test. He did. You could say, well, the Bible, well, what about the canon or the rule that were used in order to determine which books were in and out of the Bible? Well, we can discuss those types of things. See, those are measurable things, whether you feel they're right or wrong. So see, it's not a matter of proving right or wrong. I'm just saying that it happened. I'm trying to get the brother at least come to reality and recognize it happened. Regardless of how you feel about it, we can discuss measurably whether or not, you know, if you have evidence or deductive reasoning or whatever, things that are measurable, whether or not, you know, you can build a solid case, but when it's just like, this didn't happen. That's what the brother said. So anyway, at any rate, you can type in Uthman, and you'll find numerous accounts of this happening. All right. And so, again, it's just a matter of dealing with reality. To repeatedly, again, I used the word translation a couple of times, but I made it clear when he kept hanging on that word, that no, I'm talking about versions. And there were variant versions. There are still Muslims today who claim to have variant versions. I don't know whether or not it's true. But to say that they don't, you know, again, I haven't seen them. It's the same thing for me as when Elijah Muhammad said Farah taught him something, I'm not going to say, well, he didn't. I wasn't there. So I have to accept Elijah's word about it. And evidentially, I have read where his brother said that Farah did teach that, the things that Elijah Muhammad said. And his brother just died within the last 2 years. In fact, there's a link to his website and his group site on www.archstudies.org. You know, it's, so for me, it's not a matter of whether or not, I'm not going to call a man a liar because I disagree with him, it just didn't happen. That's not functioning in reality. Also, I mean, when you come up with things and, you know, I mean, it's not dealing in reality. It's like me saying, prove that I'm not Superman. And because then I won't prove that you're not Superman. Oh, see, you're wrong. To me, that is ridiculous and should not be part of higher-level debate or higher-level discussion. That is esoteric reasoning beyond anything that I've ever seen. Again, it's obvious what I stand for. If you're not clear, all you got to do is ask me. I'll tell you exactly what I stand for. I'll tell you exactly what the intent is of a broadcast. I won't continuously, when you ask me a question, avoid answering it and then start talking about a whole lot of stuff that no one knows but you. And I'm sure there are some other people out there who are into that same thing, just like there are numerous thousands of sects and subsects of all these things all claiming to stand for something. You know, some of them rise to the level of trying to be measurable by boldly standing and making a claim. So, at any rate, for me, I mean, I say more power to the brother, but it really was a distraction, and I apologize to members of the Nation of Islam who I think he co-opted the entire segments on this particular topic, because, again, he started off saying he was a follower of Elijah Muhammad, but he was just trying to get to Egypt. He claimed to be a follower of Belial, but then yesterday he said he was a follower of Sheikh someone or another. So I don't know. I have no idea. Sent me stuff from the Way, some French stuff, sent me a video, a link directly to John Hendrik Clark, but then said, oops, I didn't mean to do it. Matter of fact, he sent the same thing twice. So that means, oops, I didn't mean to do it two times. And it wasn't a link to something and that was on the page. It was a link directly to it. Directly to that. And that's because, again, there was some nationalism. Maybe he heard one or two things that sounded familiar or something he wanted to hold to. Like I said, evidence is not found because someone says something you agree with. Evidence is measurable. It is measurable. Anything beyond that, if I just stand here and I'm not willing to point out exactly how I came to my conclusions, not that I came to them, but how I came to them, then it's just gibberish. And so I'm not trying to be insulting to the brother. I'm just saying that, you know, I was distracted at my job today because I listened to several of these things because I'm trying to figure out what exactly does he stand for. And at the end of the day, it is just Egyptology or whatever. And I say more power to him. But stop laying claims to things that you don't believe in. Stop laying claims to Warith Houdin Muhammad, who does not, I've never seen anything from him saying that he holds to that. Nothing. Brother can send me something saying that Warith Houdin Muhammad is in Egyptology. Send me something. There's nothing out there, but he laid claim to that. Laid claim to Elijah Muhammad till he disagreed and he said far didn't teach it. So at any rate, what I want to do is I want to get back to the original topic at hand, which was the Nation of Islam. Now, what I don't intend to do is I don't intend to waste any more of your all time beyond, I see my brother has called, and I'll give him, let's see, well, how much time we got here. I will give him exactly 5 minutes to say whatever he wants to say. Well, that's too much time. I gave him 5 minutes to do that yesterday. I will let him get whatever he wants, his final words, off of his chest. But again, everything is part of the verbal record. Everything is. And so all you got to do is listen to it. All right, my brother, go ahead. What do you got to say?
Okay, peace, first of all. How you doing?
Good.
Okay, let me, I can do it in 2 minutes probably.
Okay, I will give you
address some of these statements that are being made.
Okay.
First of all, I'm not an Egyptologist. My study is etymology. I study from Sheikh Anta Diop in Senegal University. That's where my study in my field is. He happens to be a linguist, Egyptologist, into Egyptology. He's also into anthropology and archaeology. That's the part of the field and part of his curriculum. That's in Senegal.com. I'm Muslim. I practice Islam, al-Islam. I'm not nationalist. I'm not none of that. And I am an imam of Imam Wahduddin Muhammad. Chapter 2, verse 106 in the Quran, Al-Baqarah, says none of the Quran do we abrogate. That is strictly there in any Quran in the Arabia if you read it. In chapter 3, verse 7, it's very clear. It says that there's basic fundamental meanings, and then you have the allegorical meanings. But those who have a sick disease in their heart take the basic fundamental meanings over what is basic. The word there is mutashabihat, and the other word is mukamit. So those words are there. Now, if someone don't have a grasp of the subject matter, everything will be spurious, and everything would be suspect if you don't have no understanding of the subject matter you're making reference to. And also, dealing with Uthman, in the various evidence that you produced, the word version never came out. And Maulana Ali is not of none of the four madhabs in Islam. He's a part of the Ahmadiyya sect, who was known as a reject of the Islam during that time. So he was making mention of what was taking place. And in your own evidence, he never mentioned versions. What he said was variances of translations, reciters, just what I said, exactly what I said. And what I was trying to convey to you about translations and about recitation. Recitation, like I said, once again, was tajweed. It didn't have anything to do with diversion, because the Quran is a living book. The book itself, people walk around knowing the whole entire Quran. And the Quran was written down during that time period. Read the Sealed Nectar, best biography of Muhammad's life. Best biography of Muhammad's life is Sealed Nectar. So this is clear evidence. I sent you Abyssinia, first Hijra, so you can see that took place, that migration took place in Egypt. That's all I need. Thank you.
All right. My brother then, again, got it off his chest. Now, again, you know, he actually raised a question for Muslims then, because he did. He quoted a surah that he sent me an email on saying, hey, there are no abrogations in the Quran. Well, I'm not going to go back and do it again, but what I encourage you to do is go ahead back and listen to this broadcast. And I quoted another surah, and that's for you Muslims to figure out, where he says that if we do abrogate, we'll replace it with a better one. So it's kind of a huge jump to say there is no abrogation, but when we abrogate, we do it with a better one. So that's between you all to discuss. I'm not going to sit here and just throw words back and forth, or surahs back and forth, because I'm not set for the defense of the Quran. I'm set for the defense of the Bible. In Maulana Muhammad Ali's version of the Quran, he is Ahmadiyya, and if you go back and listen to yesterday, I actually said that. You know, again, doesn't make a difference to me. I said that yesterday. So it wasn't any profound information for me. It doesn't make his Quran any worse than anyone else's. So Ahmadiyya's, I guess, it probably would be the best one. You know, so at any rate, he does, in fact, say that there were variations of readings. He does say that, and he also says there were private copies, and he destroyed the private copies. He says, as a matter of fact, it says, he suppressed all private copies which were perhaps not made with sufficient care and might have contained variations of readings. It's clear what's being talked about, and there's like two pages on this. His whole concern is that the private copies were not made with the same care as his copies, or the copies that he felt were public or whatever, and so therefore they weren't as consistent. The whole idea of bringing them together, he did this because he said there needs to be one standardized version of the Quran, not a bunch of private copies that may have indicated something different. And it may have been according because of different words and different dialects. I'm not debating that. The fact is that they all did not say the same thing, and my brother keeps making the point that there weren't different versions. Then why would he need to burn any? He burned them because of the confusion that it was causing. And again, all you got to do is get the Quran, and you can also pull this up on yesterday, my brother told me that it didn't happen because there was no evidence. And then, of course, today when I point out, at the end of the broadcast yesterday, when I point out that, well, it's in the front of a Quran. It's also numerous pages of it in history. I told him history says it. He wanted me to show him a copy of a burned Quran, which is ridiculous. Again, that's like saying, you know, and that's when I used it. It was a ridiculous analogy. My analogy was that's like saying, show me the penny that I lost. Well, actually, it is the exact same thing. Show me the penny that I lost. All I need to do is prove that it is gone historically. I don't have to find the penny and say, wow, this is the one that's lost. Because, if I pick it up and say, this is the one that's lost, it's no longer lost. If I could show you the copies of the Quran that were burned, then that means they weren't burned. That's just a ridiculous point to make. The reality is that they were. History says that they were. Qurans, or at least this particular Quran, says that they were. I've read other books, Islamic books, that says that they were. And they all don't say that he did it because, you know what, the Quran was, you know, he was destroying, you know, the truth and other ones. And I don't mean to imply that. My point was yesterday, is I was trying to make a point to the brother, is that if you're dealing in evidence, how can you sit here and tell me that, give me a logical reason why Uthman burned the variant translations, but variant versions that may have been due to dialects. Doesn't matter. They were still there. Now, I'll sit here and tell you right off the top of my head that I think it's perfectly reasonable that if you have a standardized version that individuals who were witnesses to the sayings said were accurate to what Muhammad said, and I found a private copy that said something different, you know what? The evidence says, let me see, what is my evidence? Wow, this is a common version that is accepted by many, by the followers who knew Muhammad, and by the individuals who memorized his sermons. And so based upon that, I would give deference to that one. If I found another one, okay, I would look at it and say, okay, well, where'd this come from? If it has a murkier beginning, then I would have done the exact same thing. The point that I was trying to make to the brother is, read some evidence. You have to think evidentially. I think that's perfectly reasonable what Uthman did, from my perspective. I think it's reasonable. Would I have done the same thing? I don't know, but I think it was reasonable. I think that from an evidential perspective, when you read the thing, it was reasonable. My point is this. How do you know if you have not thought it through evidentially? And that's what I was asking the brother. Kept asking him. How do you know he didn't burn the good copies and keep his own? How do you know? If one were to ask me, how do I know that the Gospel of Stephen shouldn't be in the Bible, I could actually make my legal evidential case for that. Because I actually own the Gospel of Stephen, John, I own the Gospel of Mary, the lost books of the Bible. I own all of these things, and I've looked at them myself. And I built my evidential case. I don't just sit there and say it's not so just because I don't want it to be. That's not evidence. All right, that's enough time spent on that. Two-thirds of the broadcast on that. I appreciate the brother calling. I will take his call in the future, but I will not. You know what? If I ever do a show on, and he says he's not into Egyptology or whatever, he says he studies on, I don't know who Sheikh anyone is. I see people walking around in the city that I live in claiming to be sheiks. Now, I'm not saying that that's the case with his teacher. I'm just saying I don't know. So just throwing names out there means nothing to me. It means absolutely nothing. Not to mention the fact that you can, it doesn't matter, you can be the most prominent person on the planet. You can be rich, you can have titles, you can have land. But it's what you say that can be measured. It's what you can say. Howard Hughes was one of the richest men on the planet and was fruity batty as a fruitcake. And I'm not saying that to imply anybody else is. I'm just saying it does not matter. You can throw titles. You can do that all you want. I can sit here right now and tell you, well, you know what, I hold as friends, and this is true. A couple of my friends, one of them was a vice president of the Southern Baptist Convention, and another was the a vice president in the National Baptist. I could sit here and name drop. I could sit here and do that. And it's absolutely true. But their stature and names mean nothing to me. Let me read to you what the Apostle Paul had to say about names and stature. And this is in relation to the apostles written in script. Well, a couple of things. First, I want to read you this, then I'll read you something else. The Apostle Paul said this, okay, in Galatians chapter 1. He said this. He said, verse 11, I make known to you, brethren, that the gospel which was preached by me is not according to man, but I neither received it from man, nor was I taught it, but it came through the revelation of Jesus Christ. For you have heard of my former conduct in Judaism, how I persecuted the church of God beyond measure and tried to destroy it. And I advanced in Judaism beyond many of my contemporaries in my own nation, being more exceedingly zealous for the traditions of my fathers. But when it pleased God, who separated me from my mother's womb and called me through his grace to reveal his Son in me that I might preach him amongst the Gentiles, I did not immediately confer with flesh and blood, nor did I go up to Jerusalem to those who were apostles before me. But I went to Arabia, returned again to Damascus. Then after 3 years, I went to Jerusalem to see Peter and remained with him 15 days. But I saw none of the other apostles except James, the Lord's brother. Then he goes on to say in chapter 2, listen to what he thinks about stature. And then we'll jump to another reference, but listen to this. He says, verse 1, then after 14 years I went up again to Jerusalem with Barnabas and also took Titus with me. And I went up by revelation and communicated to them that the gospel which I preach amongst the Gentiles, but privately to those who were of reputation, lest by any means I might run or had run in vain. Yet not even Titus, who was with me, being a Greek, was compelled to be circumcised. But this occurred because of false brethren secretly brought in, who came in by stealth to spy out our liberty which we had in Christ Jesus, that they might bring us into bondage, to whom we did not yield submission even for an hour, and the truth of the gospel might continue in you. Then he goes on to say, but from those who seem to be something, whatever they were, and he's talking about the apostles. He's talking about Peter and John and all these guys. But from those who seem to be something, whatever they were, it makes no difference to me. God shows personal favoritism to no man. For those who seem to be something added nothing to me. But on the contrary, when they saw that the gospel for the uncircumcised had been committed to me, as the gospel for the circumcised was to Peter, for it worked effectively in Peter for the apostleship to the circumcised, also worked effectively in me towards Gentiles. And when James, Peter, and John, who seemed to be pillars, perceived the grace that had been given to me, they gave me and Barnabas the right hand of fellowship that we should go to the Gentiles and they to the circumcised. So the point that he's making here is, so what? They were up there of stature. I didn't go up there for their approval. I didn't go up there to name drop so they'll say, wow, these are my fault. He didn't go up there for that. He went up there with evidence to prove something. And when the individuals with the names saw his evidence, then they yielded. That's what evidence does. If someone is standing for truth, the truth will make you free. Further, the Apostle Paul had this to say in the book of 1 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 1, let a man so consider us as servants of Christ and stewards of the mysteries of God. Moreover, it is required in stewards that one be found faithful. But with me, it is a very small thing that I should be judged of you or by a human court. In fact, I do not even judge myself, for I know nothing against myself. Yet I am justified by this, but he who judges me is the Lord. Therefore, judge nothing before its time, until the Lord comes, who will bring both the light and hidden things of darkness to reveal the counsels of the hearts, and then each one's praise will come from God. Now these things, brethren, have I figuratively transferred to myself and Apollos for your sakes, that you might learn in us not to think of men beyond what is written, that none of you may be puffed up on behalf of one against another. For who makes you to differ from another? And what do you have that you did not receive? Now, if you did indeed receive it, then why are you glorying as if you had not received it? The point that he's making here is that stature doesn't matter. You can name drop all you want. I follow Christ. I don't follow Paul. gospel of Christ. Why? Because I believe that Jesus Christ was Almighty God come incarnate. Why? Because that's what the Bible teaches. Now, if you want to say the Bible doesn't teach that, then we have a measurable, evidential debate. Not what another book says. Well, this other book says that the Bible, I don't care what someone else's book says. What does the Bible say about it? Now, if you want to discuss whether or not the Bible can be believed, then that's another discussion. That's why, to start this entire thing, this entire series of segments, the point that I've made repeatedly is, I'm not trying to prove the Nation of Islam wrong. I'm proving it's not Christian. There are two stages here. First of all, you can evidentially discuss the evidence of the Bible. And discussing the evidence, like, the Bible doesn't say the Quran's wrong. So therefore, it doesn't matter to me. Now, the Quran says there are some things in the Bible that are in error and redefines them. There's a discussion. They're measurable. Did the Quran have the right to change those things? That's a measurable discussion. And I will defend the Word of God anytime anyone attempts to change it or to twist it. It has to stand on its own merits. Just because another holy book says something doesn't make that other holy book accurate just because you believe it. What is the evidence for that? Lastly, in the book of 2 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 12, the Apostle Paul had this to say. Instead of glorying in people, this is what he had to say. He said this: we dare not number ourselves among some. And in 2 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 12, we dare not number or class ourselves or compare ourselves with those who commend themselves. Well, we dare not class ourselves or compare ourselves with those who commend themselves, but they measuring themselves by themselves and comparing themselves among themselves are not wise. We, however, will not boast beyond measure, but within the limits of the sphere which God has appointed us, a sphere which especially includes you. For we are not extending ourselves beyond our sphere, thus reaching you, for it was to you that we came with the gospel of Christ. Not boasting of things beyond measure, that is, in other men's labors. Not boasting in other men's labors, but having hope that as your faith is increased, we shall be greatly enlarged by you in our sphere, to preach the gospel in regions even beyond you, and not to boast in another man's sphere of accomplishment. But he who glories, let him glory in the Lord, for not he who commends himself is approved, but he whom the Lord commends. And so again, doesn't matter. I honor what Waris Houdin Muhammad attempted to do. Because, again, just like I believe that the Nation of Islam is not Christian and claims to correct things in the Bible, if you read my perspective, I say the same thing about the Quran. Now, I'm not a Muslim, but I do believe the Nation of Islam misquotes the Quran. Why? Because I've looked at what they said it said, and it does not say what they said it said. That's measurable. Doesn't mean that I believe in the Quran. It's a matter of looking at evidence. I don't deny the reality of things. Okay. So, at any rate, on some level, I enjoyed the discussion to get the cobwebs out, you know, and get a chance to recognize that, you know what, individuals will co-opt anything to make the points that they want to make instead of taking the time to evidentially study what they ought to study if they claim to believe a particular thing. And I'm not saying that about Rajesh. He says that he has studied, you know, the Egyptian under Sheikh whoever. That's fine. Again, I have nothing to do with that. Neither does this broadcast. Where they would say something is different in the Word of God, then I will prove evidentially they're wrong. He said Christian does mean crystallized, come from Christ. Then he claims to be a student of etymology or an etymologist. Well, I put on the notes page listings of the etymology of that word. Never responded to it to this day. Why? Because it's measurable evidence, not to mention the fact that it's absolutely obvious. All right. Spent the entire broadcast. Guarantee you that I will not spend another day of broadcast on this particular topic. What I will do, however, is that I will spend time on the Nation of Islam, which is what this was about. And initially, that's what I thought his phone calls were relating to, until we found the deeper issues. All right. So beginning with tomorrow's broadcast, I will just begin and just go over the entire segments again. Anyone from the Nation of Islam wants to get involved, get a question or comment, give me a call. Area code 646-652-2905. Let's talk briefly, though. I did want to point this out. I pointed this out to some other brothers in the Nation of Islam, and they were surprised to see this. And in fact, it sort of startled them. But let me read this to you. Okay, I'm holding in front of me two copies of Message to the Black Man. Okay, the older of the two copies was published by Muhammad's Temple, number 2, 7351 Stony Island, and it was copyrighted in 1965 by Elijah Muhammad. The second, newer version was published by United Brothers Communication Systems, P.O. Box 5368, Newport News, Virginia, and the copyright, let's see, they have the 1965 copyright of Elijah Muhammad, but they also said, let me see, what distinguishes, and this is a note inside the copyright page, they say, what distinguishes this edition of Message to the Black Man in America was written by Brother H. Khalifa, copyright 1992, by the UB and US, which is the United Brothers, and I believe the U.S. is probably United Sisters Communication System, P.O. Box 5368, Newport News, Virginia. No part. Okay. So, and there's a phone number in here. At any rate, let me point something out to you. On page 272 of the original, the Message to the Black Man published by Elijah Muhammad in 1965, from the temple that he was specifically presiding over, the very last paragraph says this, and this is what I believe to be a false prophecy, and so I do want to talk about a couple of those things, and we'll get back to this sometime. Maybe tomorrow I'll start off the broadcast before I go back into the perspective, but it says this, America's falling, her doom has come, and none said the prophet shall help her in the day of her downfall. In the Bible, God pleads with you to fly out of her, America, and seek refuge in him. And he uses Revelations chapter 18, verse 4, for reference for that. And he, of course, he says, that's America, and I'll read that to you, Revelation 18, 4. And I heard another voice from heaven saying, come out of her, my people, lest you share in her sins, lest you receive her plagues. And of course, this is Mystery Babylon. And so, you know, he believed America was Mystery Babylon. All right. Now, this is the important part. Listen to these dates. What is going to happen in 1973 and 74? It certainly will change your minds about following a doomed people, a people who hate you and your kind and who call one who teaches the truth about them a hater. They are the producers of hatred of us. We are with God and his righteous. So here, he prophesied that something significant, what is going to happen in 1973 and 74? It will certainly change your minds. Something significant that will change the minds of black people. Okay? Now, I'm 46 years old. I was 13 and 14 in those years, and actually nothing happened. Nothing happened. All right? The point that I'm making is that when I first brought this up to a brother about that, he told me that I was misquoting it because I was quoting it. I was at work at the time, and I didn't have my message to the black man. He told me I was misquoting it. Now, he did have his message to the black man, which happened to be the other newer copy that I have. Let me read to you what that one says. It's the exact same text, same page, same paragraph, But where it gets down to where it says what's going to happen in 73, 74, it says what's going to happen in 1965 and 66. It will certainly change your minds. And it's the, everything is the same, except they changed with this newer publication. They changed the prophetic dates from 73, 74. Now understand, when Elijah Muhammad wrote this, he was prophesying because this was 1965. And so he said 73, 74, prophesying something was going to happen. Did not happen. So these brothers looking back on that, and this is just my, I'm surmising this, because this is not a typo. How do you typo and change the years, both of them? And everything else is identical. They take it back to the Watts riots and the riots of 65, 66. So that they could point to, and that was the point the brother was making when I had said that. I said, well, Elijah said something significant was going to happen and was going to change the minds of black people and turn them towards Islam in 73, 74. And he said in front of people, no, that never happened. Elijah didn't say that. He whipped out his Quran and had me doubting that I read something. And so I read his, it did say 65 and 66. And then he went on to expound that it was the Watts riots as well as the racial tensions that were exploding across the country, you know, and that's when they had their greatest era of growth. Black people were recognizing, and he passionately made that point. And I stood there because I looked at it and I said, wow, okay, that's evidence. I must have, you know, unintentionally, I don't know where I got that from. I apologize to the brother. Not that I was wrong about the Nation of Islam, but that I misquoted that. So when I got home, I broke out the Quran that was published during his lifetime from the temple he sat over, and it did, in fact, say 1973 and 74, just like I said. So I didn't immediately go back to the brother. What I did was I did get a chance to get a look at the Quran that he had because I held it in my hands. When I was looking at the dates, when I thought I had misquoted him. So I realized where he got it from, and I went out and I bought myself one. And then I put them together, and that's where I found that I could not believe that someone would misquote for the sake of, look, the bottom line is Elijah was wrong in his prophecy. The prophecy was not accurate. It wasn't. You could say it's the fallacies of a human being. Okay, we can talk about that there. But you don't change his writings. You don't change what he said later. I don't think he would have done that. I think he would have manned up. Maybe he would. Maybe it had a different interpretation of what was meant, but he would not have changed and tried to act like it never happened. And so from my perspective, the individual who did this is of the same mindset as to what we're dealing with now. If you don't like the truth, just change it. Just change it. But the problem is, it's measurable. I doubt very seriously. I wonder how many of this copy of The Message to the Black Man are out there. And how many people have an older copy? See, I had an old Muslim give me the older copy. That was the first one they asked me to study and take a look at it. And so I honor him for giving me an older copy, but I'm glad he did. So how many individuals are running out there on information based upon someone just changing something because they didn't approve of the fact that they had an uncomfortable moment because their evidence did not stack up? Anyway, I'll pick it up tomorrow. We'll talk more about there are a couple other things as far as dates are concerned that I do want to address. But what I really want to do is I want to give homage to what I said I would do and spend a week in discussion with individuals of the Nation of Islam and covering the doctrine of the Nation of Islam. So I'll pick it up tomorrow. I'll wrap up a few things tomorrow. Maybe not a long broadcast, maybe a half an hour, but I'll pick it up tomorrow and we'll have discussion on some of the other dates and some of the other things that were measurable that were said that in fact didn't come to pass. Until then, this is Rick Young, the apologist, and I'll see you next time. Thank you for joining me for today's edition of ARC Studies Live. I'm Rick Young. The Apologist segment focuses exclusively on addressing your questions and comments concerning hardcore doctrinal issues relating to biblical difficulties, countercult studies, and Christian apologetics. For more information about ARC, go to the World Wide Web at www.arcstudies.org. Again, that's www.arcstudies.org.